25. The girl who looked up. I will confess my murders before you. Most painfully, I have killed someone who loved me dearly. From Oathbringer, Preface. The Tower of Urethiru was a skeleton, and these strata beneath Shallan's fingers were veins that wrapped the bones, dividing and spreading across the entire body. But what did those veins carry? Not blood. She slid through the corridors on the third level, in the bowels, away from civilization, passing through doorways without doors and rooms without occupants. Men had locked themselves in with their light, telling themselves that they'd conquered this ancient behemoth. But all they had were outposts in the darkness, eternal waiting darkness. These hallways had never seen the sun. Storms that raged through Roshar never touched here. This was a place of eternal stillness, and men could no more conquer it than Kremlings could claim to have conquered the boulder they hid beneath. She defied Dalinar's orders, that all were to travel in pairs. She didn't worry about that. Her satchel and safe pouch were stuffed with new spheres recharged in the high storm. She felt gluttonous carrying so many, breathing in the light whenever she wished. She was as safe as a person could be, so long as she had that light. She wore Vale's clothing, but not yet her face. She wasn't truly exploring, though she did make a mental map. She just wanted to be in this place, sensing it. It could not be comprehended, but perhaps it could be felt. Yasna had spent years hunting for this mythical city and the information she'd assumed it would hold. Navani spoke of the ancient technology she was sure this place must contain. So far, she'd been disappointed. She'd cooed over the oath gates, had been impressed by the system of lifts. That was it. No majestic fabrials from the past, no diagrams explaining lost technology, no books or writings at all, just dust. And darkness, Shallan thought, pausing in a circular chamber with corridors splitting out in seven different directions. She had felt the wrongness Moraes spoke of. She'd felt it the moment she'd tried to draw this place. Urethiru was like the impossible geometries of Pattern's shape, invisible, yet grating, like a discordant sound. She picked a direction at random and continued, finding herself in a corridor narrow enough that she could brush both walls with her fingers. The strata had an emerald cast here, an alien color for stone. 100 shades of wrongness. She passed several small rooms before entering a much larger chamber. She stepped into it, holding a diamond brome high for light, revealing that she was on a raised portion at the front of a large room with curving walls and rows of stone benches? It's a theater, she thought, and I've walked out onto the stage. Yes, she could make out a balcony above. Rooms like this struck her with their humanity. Everything else about this place was so empty and arid. Endless rooms, corridors, and caverns. Floors strewn with only the occasional bit of civilization's detritus, like rusted hinges or an old boot's buckle. Decay spren huddled like barnacles on ancient doors. A theater was more real, more alive, despite the span of the epochs. She stepped into the center and twirled about, letting Vale's coat flare around her. I always imagined being up on one of these. When I was a child, becoming a player seemed the grandest job. To get away from home, travel to new places. To not have to be myself for at least a brief time each day. Pattern hummed, pushing out from her coat to hover above the stage in three dimensions. What is it? It's a stage for concerts or plays. Plays? Oh, you'd like them, she said. People in a group each pretend to be someone different and tell a story together. She strode down the steps at the side, walking among the benches. The audience out here watches. Pattern hovered in the center of the stage like a soloist. Ah, he said. A group lie? A wonderful, wonderful lie, Shallan said, settling onto a bench, Vale's satchel beside her. A time when people all imagine together.
I wish I could see one, Pattern said. I could understand people. Through the lies they want to be told.
Shallan closed her eyes, smiling, remembering the last time she'd seen a play at her father's. A traveling children's troupe come to entertain her. She'd taken memories for her collection. But of course, that was now lost at the bottom of the ocean. The girl who looked up, she whispered.
What? Pattern asked.
Shallan opened her eyes and breathed out stormlight. She hadn't sketched this particular scene, so she used what she had handy, a drawing she'd done of a young child in the market, bright and happy, too young to cover her safe hand. The girl appeared from the stormlight and scampered up the steps, then bowed to Pattern. There was a girl, Shallan said. This was before storms, before memories, and before legends. But there was still a girl. She wore a long scarf to blow in the wind. A vibrant red scarf grew around the girl's neck, twin tails extending far behind her and flapping in a phantom wind. The players had made the scarf hang behind the girl, using strings from above. It had seemed so real. The girl in the scarf played and danced, as girls do today, Shallan said, making the child prance around Pattern. In fact, most things were the same then as they are today, except for one big difference, the wall. Shallan drained an indulgent number of spheres from her satchel, then sprinkled the floor of the stage with grass and vines, like from her homeland. Across the back of the stage, a wall grew as Shallan had imagined it, a high, terrible wall stretching toward the moons, blocking the sky, throwing everything around the girl into shadow. The girl stepped toward it, looking up, straining to see the top. You see, in those days, a wall kept out the storms, Shallan said. It had existed for so long, nobody knew how it had been built. That did not bother them. Why wonder when the mountains began or why the sky was high? Like these things were, so the wall was. The girl danced in its shadow, and other people sprang up from Shallan's light. Each was a person from one of her sketches. Vatha, Gaz, Polona, Sabariel. They worked as farmers or washwomen, doing their duties with heads bowed. Only the girl looked up at that wall, her twin scarf tails streaming behind her. She approached a man standing behind a small cart of fruit, wearing Kaladin Stormblast's face. "Why is there a wall?" she asked the man selling fruit, speaking with her own voice.
"To keep the bad things out," he replied.
"What bad things?"
"Very bad things. There is a wall. Do not go beyond it, or you shall die."
The fruit seller picked up his cart and moved away. And still the girl looked up at the wall. Pattern hovered beside her and hummed happily to himself. "Why is there a wall?" she asked the woman suckling her child. The woman had Polona's face.
"To protect us," the woman said.
"To protect us from what?"
"Very bad things. There is a wall. Do not go beyond it, or you shall die."
The woman took her child and left. The girl climbed a tree, peeking out the top, her scarf streaming behind her. "Why is there a wall?" she called to the boy sleeping lazily in the nook of a branch. "What wall?" the boy asked. The girl thrust her finger pointedly toward the wall.
"That's not a wall," the boy said, drowsy.
Shallan had given him the face of one of the bridgemen, a Herdazian.
"That's just the way the sky is over there."
"It's a wall," the girl said. "A giant wall."
"It must be there for a purpose," the boy said. "Yes, it is a wall. Don't go beyond it, or you'll probably die."
"Well," Shallan continued, speaking from the audience,
These answers did not satisfy the girl who looked up. She reasoned to herself, if the wall kept evil things out, then the space on this side of it should be safe. So one night, while the others of the village slept, she sneaked from her home with a bundle of supplies. She walked toward the wall, and indeed the land was safe. But it was also dark, always in the shadow of that wall. No sunlight ever directly reached the people. Shallan made the illusion roll like scenery on a scroll, as the players had used, only far, far more realistic. She had painted the ceiling with light, and looking up, you seemed to be looking only at an infinite sky, dominated by that wall. This is far more extensive than I've done before, she thought, surprised. Creation Spren had started to appear around her on the benches, in the form of old latches or doorknobs, rolling about or moving end over end. Well, Dalinar had told her to practice. The girl traveled far, Shallan said, looking back toward the stage. No predators hunted her, and no storms assaulted her. The only wind was the pleasant one that played with her scarf, and the only creatures she saw were the kremlings that clicked at her as she walked. At long last, the girl in the scarves stood before the wall. It was truly expansive, running as far as she could see in either direction, and its height! It reached almost to the tranquiline halls. Shallan stood and walked onto the stage, passing into a different land, an image of fertility, vines, trees, and grass, dominated by that terrible wall. It grew spikes from its front in bristling patches. I didn't draw this scene out. At least, not recently. She'd drawn it as a youth, in detail, putting her imagined fancies down on paper. What happened? Pattern said. Shallan, I must know what happened. Did she turn back?
Of course she didn't turn back, Shallan said.
She climbed. There were outcroppings in the wall, things like these spikes or hunched, ugly statues. She had climbed the highest trees all through her youth. She could do this. The girl started climbing. Had her hair been white when she'd started? Shallan frowned. Shallan made the base of the wall sink into the stage, so although the girl got higher, she remained chest height to Shallan and Pattern. The climb took days, Shallan said, hand to her head. At night, the girl who looked up would tie herself a hammock out of her scarf and sleep there. She picked out her village at one point, remarking on how small it seemed now that she was high. As she neared the top, she finally began to fear what she would find on the other side. Unfortunately, this fear did not stop her. She was young, and questions bothered her more than fear. So it was that she finally struggled to the very top and stood to see the other side, the hidden side. Shallan choked up. She remembered sitting at the edge of her seat, listening to this story. As a child, when moments like watching the players had been the only bright spots in life. Too many memories of her father, and of her mother, who had loved telling her stories. She tried to banish those memories, but they wouldn't go. Shallan turned. Her stormlight. She'd used up almost everything she'd pulled from her satchel. Out in the seats, a crowd of dark figures watched. Eyeless, just shadows. People from her memories. The outline of her father, her mother, her brothers, and a dozen others. She couldn't create them because she hadn't drawn them properly. Not since she'd lost her collection. Next to Shallan, the girl stood triumphantly on the wall's top, her scarves and white hair streaming out behind her in a sudden wind. Pattern buzzed beside Shallan.
And on that side of the wall, Shallan whispered, the girl saw steps.
The backside of the wall was crisscrossed with enormous sets of steps leading down to the ground, so distant.
What does it mean?
Pattern said.
The girl stared at those steps,
Shallan whispered, remembering. And suddenly the gruesome statues on her side of the wall made sense.
The spears.
The way it cast everything into shadow. The wall did indeed hide something evil, something frightening. It was the people, like the girl and her village.
The illusion started to break down around her. This was too ambitious for her to hold, and it left her strained, exhausted, her head starting to pound. She let the wall fade, claiming its stormlight. The landscape vanished, then finally the girl herself. Behind, the shadowed figures in the seats started to evaporate. Stormlight streamed back to Shallan, stoking the storm inside.
"That's how it ended?" Pattern asked.
"No," Shallan said, stormlight puffing from her lips. "She goes down, sees a perfect society lit by stormlight. She steals some and brings it back. The storms come as a punishment, tearing down the wall."
"Ah," Pattern said, hovering beside her on the now dull stage. "So that's how the storms first began?"
"Of course not," Shallan said, feeling tired. "It's a lie, Pattern. A story. It doesn't mean anything."
"Then why are you crying?"
She wiped her eyes and turned away from the empty stage. She needed to get back to the markets. In the seats, the last of the shadowy audience members puffed away, all but one, who stood up and walked out the back doors of the theater. Startled, Shallan felt a sudden shock run through her. That figure hadn't been one of her illusions. She flung herself from the stage, landing hard, veil's coat fluttering, and dashed after the figure. She held the rest of her stormlight, a thrumming, violent tempest. She skidded into the hall outside, glad for sturdy boots and simple trousers. Something shadowy moved down the corridor. Shallan gave chase, lips drawn to a sneer, letting stormlight rise from her skin and illuminate her surroundings. As she ran, she pulled a string from her pocket and tied her hair back, becoming radiant. Radiant would know what to do if she caught this person. Can a person look that much like a shadow? "Pattern!" she shouted, thrusting her right hand forward. Luminescent fog formed there, becoming her shard blade. Light escaped her lips, transforming her more fully into radiant. Luminescent wisps trailed behind her, and she felt it chasing her. She charged into a small round chamber and skidded to a stop. A dozen versions of herself, from drawings she'd done recently, split around her and dashed through the room. Shallan in her dress, veil in her coat, Shallan as a child, Shallan as a youth, Shallan as a soldier, a happy wife, a mother, leaner here, plumper there, scarred, bright with excitement, bloodied and in pain. They vanished after passing her, collapsing one after another into stormlight that curled and twisted about itself before vanishing away. Radiant raised her shard blade in the stance Adolin had been teaching her, sweat dripping down the sides of her face. The room would have been dark but for the light curling off her skin and passing through her clothing to rise around her. Empty. She'd either lost her quarry in the corridors, or it had been a spren, and not a person at all. Or there was nothing there in the first place, a part of her worried. Your mind is not trustworthy these days.
What was that? Radiant said. Did you see it?
No, Pattern thought to her. I was thinking on the lie.
She walked around the edge of the circular room. The wall was scored by a series of deep slots that ran from floor to ceiling. She could feel air moving through them. What was the purpose of a room like this? Had the people who designed this place been mad? Radiant noted faint light coming from several of the slots, and with it the sounds of people in a low, echoing clatter. The breakaway market? Yes. She was in that region, and while she was on the third level, the market's cavern was a full 4 stories high. She moved to the next slot and peered through it, trying to decide just where it let out. Was this... Something moved in the slot. A dark mass wriggled deep inside, squeezing between walls, like goo but with bits jutting out. Those were elbows, ribs, fingers splayed along one wall, each knuckle bending backward. A spren, she thought, trembling. It is some strange kind of spren. The thing twisted, head deforming in the tiny confines, and looked toward her. She saw eyes reflecting her light, twin spheres set in a mashed head, a distorted human visage. Radiant pulled back with a sharp gasp, summoning her shard blade again and holding it wardingly before herself. But what was she going to do? Hack her way through the stone to get to the thing? That would take forever. Did she even want to reach it? No, but she had to anyway. The market, she thought, dismissing her blade and darting back the way she'd come. It's heading to the market. With Stormlight propelling her, Radiant dashed through corridors, barely noticing as she breathed out enough to transform her face into veils. She swerved through a network of twisted passages. This maze, these enigmatic tunnels, were not what she'd expected from the home of the Knights Radiant. Shouldn't this be a fortress, simple but grand, a beacon of light and strength in the dark times? Instead, it was a puzzle. Vale stumbled out of the back corridors into populated ones, then dashed past a group of children laughing and holding up chips for light and making shadows on the walls. Another few turns took her out onto the balcony walk around the cavernous breakaway market, with its bobbing lights and busy pathways. Vale turned left to see slots in the wall here. For ventilation? The thing had come through one of these, but where had it gone after that? A scream rose, shrill and cold, from the floor of the market below. Cursing to herself, Vale took the steps at a reckless pace, just like Vale, running headlong into danger. She sucked in her breath, and the stormlight puffing around her pulled in, causing her to stop glowing. After a short dash, she found people gathering between 2 packed rows of tents. The stalls here sold various goods, many of which looked to be salvage from the more abandoned war camps. More than a few enterprising merchants, with the tacit approval of their high princes, had sent expeditions back to gather what they could. With Stormlight flowing and Renarin to help with the Oath Gate, those had finally been allowed into Urethiru. The high princes had gotten first pick. The rest of their finds were heaped in the tents here, watched over by guards with long cudgels and short tempers. Vale shoved her way to the front of the crowd, finding a large horn-eater man cursing and holding his hand. Rock, she thought, recognizing the bridgeman, though he wasn't in uniform. His hand was bleeding, like it was stabbed right through the center, Vale thought. What happened here? She demanded, still holding her light in to keep it from puffing out and revealing her. Rock eyed her, while his companion, a bridgeman she thought she'd seen before, rapped his hand.
Who are you to ask me this thing?
Storms. She was Vale right now, but she didn't dare expose the ruse, especially not in the open.
I'm on Aladar's policing force, she said, digging in her pocket. I have my commission here. It's fine, Rock said, sighing, his wariness seeming to evaporate. I did nothing. Some person pulled knife. I did not see him well. Long coat and a hat. A woman in crowd screamed, drawing my attention. Then this man, he attacked.
Storms, who is dead?
Dead? The horn-eater looked to his companion. Nobody is dead. Attacker stabbed my hand, then ran. Was assassination attempt, maybe? Person got angry about rule of tower, so he attacked me for being in Colin Guard?
Vale felt a chill. Horn-eater. Tall. Burly.
The attacker had chosen a man who looked very similar to the one she had stabbed the other day. In fact, they weren't far from All's Alley, just a few streets over in the market. The two bridgemen turned to leave, and Vale let them go. What more could she learn? The horn-eater had been targeted not because of anything he'd done, but because of how he looked. And the attacker had been wearing a coat and hat, like Vale usually did.
"I thought I'd find you here."
Vale started, then whirled around, hand going to her belt knife. The speaker was a woman in a brown hava. She had straight Alethi hair, dark brown eyes, bright red painted lips, and sharp black eyebrows almost certainly enhanced with makeup. Vale recognized this woman, who was shorter than she'd seemed while sitting down. She was one of the thieves that Vale had approached at All's Alley, the one whose eyes had lit up when Shallan had drawn the Ghost Blood's symbol.
"What did he do to you?" the woman asked, nodding toward Rock. "Or do you just have a thing for stabbing horn-eaters?"
"This wasn't me," Vale said.
"I'm sure."
The woman stepped closer.
"I've been waiting for you to turn up again."
"You should stay away, if you value your life."
Vale started off through the market. The short woman scrambled after her.
"My name is Ishna. I'm an excellent writer. I can take dictations. I have experience moving in the market underground."
"You want to be my ward?"
"Ward?"
The young woman laughed.
"What are we? Light eyes? I want to join you."
"The Ghost Bloods, of course.
We're not recruiting."
"Please."
She took Vale by the arm.
"Please. The world is wrong now. Nothing makes sense. But you, your group, you know things. I don't want to be blind anymore."
Shallan hesitated. She could understand that desire to do something, rather than just feeling the world tremble and shake.
But the Ghost Bloods were despicable.
This woman would not find what she desired among them. And if she did, then she was not the sort of person that Shallan would want to add to Moraes' quiver.
"No," Shallan said. "Do the smart thing, and forget about me and my organization."
She pulled out of the woman's grip and hurried away through the bustling market.